Hear my words and bear witness to my vow. Night gathers, and now my watch begins.
Beware, spoiler phobes. You have stumbled upon a storm of spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones series in conjunction with the Song of Ice and Fire books by George R.R. Martin. This discussion can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, guesses, theories, and general crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder. You do not wish to be spoiled or are not caught up, please stop now.
The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie. But what do we have left once we abandon the lie?
Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all.
Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez and I've seen every episode of the fifth season of Teen Mom on MTV.
My name is Joanna Robinson and I have never seen a single episode of Teen Mom on MTV.
What?
Sorry.
I feel slightly betrayed, but not like Jon Snow's going to be betrayed later on this season, nah? Yeah, that's right.
We're diving right into the Ollie hate.
Yeah, there's no Neil, but I just wanted to start off right there to let you know that you're still on a storm of spoilers. Neil's out ill, but Joanna and I are going to... We have the benefit of having a really good episode of Game of Thrones to sort of guide us through, so I don't think we're really going to have that much trouble coming up with crazy stuff to say. Maybe it just won't be as crazy as it usually is?
I can try to dial up the crazy to make up for Neil. I'll do it.
Yeah, when we get to the Night's King, we could just go. We could just go and you could fill in a whole bunch of historical holes I have in my head.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
Well, I want to know how long the Starks have been in control of the North and things like that. I have historical questions.
Okay.
And then, you know, if you want to attempt and then get them wrong, I'm sure we have the bountiful internet that's commenting at fightinginthewarroom.com/gotspoilers that will correct us. It's a self-correcting system, like the human body. Storm of spoilers. All right, let's kick it off. Episode 8, Season 5, Hard Home. We start off in Marine in everybody's most anticipated pairing, at least in terms of characters that speak dialogue at each other, which would be Tyrion and Daenerys. First, they have to deal with the Jorah problem, which I feel is done justly.
I mean, I don't know if it's... I guess it's just. It's definitely politic, which is what you want in a political advisor, is the political answer. I feel like... Daenerys should have. Ooh, I just realized that Mother's Mercy, which is the name of the finale, which we all are like, oh, what does it apply to? Maybe Daenerys will finally have more mercy for Jorah. I don't know.
Well, it ends with him being banished again, and then he sort of tries to get back in the fighting pits. And
yeah, he's definitely. excuse me. He's definitely going to be in the fighting pits this week. This week they're doing the Draznak's Pit stuff. A Dance of Dragons is the name of the episode. I was just rereading that chapter and, you know, Tyrion's in the pit and Dany spares him. Like, she doesn't know Tyrion, but, like, there are some dwarves. And she's like, how about we not loose some lions on some dwarves? And his daughter's like, no, it says everyone's favorite. And she's like, no, we're not doing it. So she doesn't know it's Tyrion, but she happens to like save his life in the fighting pits. But, you know, since Tyrion is her advisor now, we wouldn't have anyone we would be rooting for in the fighting pits if they hadn't like weirdly contorted the plot that Jorah is just like keeps going back for more. So Jorah's going to be down in the fighting pit. So like when they do an extended sort of gladiator Spartacus stuff, it won't be like anonymous fighters. It'll be someone we know and care about down there, which will be Jorah, which is smart storytelling. It just doesn't make sense why Jorah would go back you know, a second time after being banished twice, you know, so.
Well, is this why they infected him? So he, like, really has nothing to live for? So we're like, go ahead, Jorah. You just figured out your father's dead. There's no more Mormonts. You're screwed.
I'm not sure. Like, that's a good point. He has nothing to live for. And I've been worried since I saw the Day in the Life video, the behind the scenes video before the season. I was worried that Jorah would die because there's a stunt shot, I think, of him, like, taking a pretty serious blow. So I'm not going to, like, go all out like I did for Bronn and be wrong and have people yell at me. I'm not going to say that Jorah's going to die, but it's very possible that he might die. Or he might just beat everyone like he did last week.
And just punch everybody in the face and watch, like, a dragon fly off and be like, shit, where do I go now?
Yeah.
And then spread, like, grayscale across the land.
I mean, what's really weird is that the Tyrion Daenerys stuff, you know, to get back to the episode, the Tyrion and Daenerys stuff is so good. It's great. We've already talked about this, but I just don't know what's going to happen when Daenerys hops on her dragon and flies away. Like, are they going to leave Tyrion behind? Is he going to take on the Barristan Selmy role and sort of rule everything? Well, that's fine. I like Tyrion in power, but I really prefer, I don't want Daenerys to, like, go off and get a Khalasar and, you know, basically relive her season one plot. I want her with Tyrion. So either she brings him with her on her dragons or she flies off on her dragons in this episode and then, like, comes back next week. You know, like, I don't want her separated from Tyrion for very long after, like, waiting so long to get the two of them together.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible that she just gets on the dragon and doesn't leave Meereen but uses the dragon somehow awesomely?
The only reason I would think not is the final episode description says Daenerys is surrounded by strangers, which Neil and I have decided means, like, a new Khalasar. And they're casting, it seems, for a new leader of the Khalasar for next season, for the casting call. You know, to be all, like, Jason Momoa-ist about the casting call. I was like, that sounds like they're looking for another Jason Momoa, basically. But... yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. I just hope they don't keep those two separated. But if, worst case scenario, Tyrion is left alone in Meereen and Daenerys flies off, I hope he keeps Jorah with him. I hope Jorah's still alive, and I hope Jorah becomes his sidekick in Meereen. But
with this whole I've been bitten by a zombie, not telling anybody syndrome.
Which you hate. You hate that.
Yes. I withholding for no reason.
Yeah, you hate it.
I mean, if it gives him a reason to fight because he has nothing to live for, great. But if he has to stick around in a... It also seems really weird to be like, I want to break the wheel. And Tyrion's like, yes. And she's like, all right, peace out. You hold down the fort here.
Dragon. Well, I mean,
that's the,
like,
sound
the
of
whole...
a dragon away.
Goodbye. The whole thing is there's also another character who gets roasted by Dragonfire who's not in the show. So, you know, we're wondering who, if they're going to do that, you know, who it would be. It could be Jorah, could be Grey Worm, could be Dario, could be a number one of them, any one of them. But, you know, it kind of takes a sting out of it if it's Jorah, because we're like, you were going to die anyway. So the dragon fire is not really that tragic. Anyway, someone might get roasted by a dragon this week is what I'm saying. And like a major character could get roasted by a dragon. So.
Sweet.
Oh, you know what would be crazy? I'm going to play Neil for a second.
Okay.
If Tyrion gets roasted by Dragonfire but doesn't burn him, and then we find out that he's a secret Targaryen.
That is Neil-level crazy.
Yay! We don't miss Neil at all. We do. We miss Neil. All right. So that's all my dragon thoughts, I think. Oh, the other thing I want to say is there's, you know, as I said, I was rereading that cool Drasnax pit fight chapter in A Dance with Dragons, and there's this really cool lady fighter who, like, takes on a boar. That I don't think they're gonna do that because we haven't seen that in any of the previews. And you know, I'm betting that they keep the fighting pretty limited. They're not gonna do, like, an extended, lengthy gladiator stuff in the pit. But
right. That
lady fighter versus the boar would be pretty cool to see. So
yeah, not since Lost crossed. Have I cared about seeing a boar slaughtered on screen. but still in Meereen, the Tyrion and Dany stuff, great, mostly because they both are like, we have crazy histories, and then they decide that Dany needs to focus, and it's just, it's nice to see truth-telling from Tyrion to Dany, and just being like, oh yes, this is what I wanted.
Yeah.
This is what I wanted all along.
One, you know, something that a lot of people pointed out, and I talked about it sort of obliquely on a cast of kings is that Tyrion rather noticeably does not mention Dorne or the Martells when he talks about the large houses who wouldn't help Daenerys.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from the next time on preview, we're going to find out this week, I believe, what Prince Doran and Dorne's plan is in terms of, you know, if he is secretly backing Daenerys somehow, or, you know, we expect to find some sort of Targaryen Martell alliance next week.
Right. Well, because that would write a lot of things with Jaime's story and sort of divorce it from whatever he's... What is he doing in the books? He's up...
He's in the Riverlands.
Up in the Riverlands being hunted by Brienne, right?
Sort of. No, I mean, he's dealing with Catelyn's brother, the Blackfish.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole thing. But, you know, who I miss. I definitely miss the Blackfish. Oh, and the other thing about the Targaryens... It is weird not having Neil here, but the other thing that I want to mention is that George R. R. Martin this week named his top five characters that he was sad were not on the show.
Oh, yes. And two of them were Tyrells. Right? He's like, Loras wasn't the eldest. There are these two other people, and they have a part to play. This is like a different part of the discussion. Which one were you going to bring up?
Well, no, I was going to bring up who wasn't on the list, actually. But yeah, no, I mean, I know it was Strong Belwas and Lady Stoneheart and...
Jane Poole and the two Tyrells.
Oh, Willis and Garland. That's stupid. Okay.
He says they're important. Sure, I was going to ask about that later.
Anyway, I don't know what he's talking about in terms of what the Tyrells might do. You know, they could do things, but I think it's more significant that he didn't mention Griff and young Griff, like the Aegon Targaryen. We've been talking about how the show skipped past it. Does that mean he's not important, or he doesn't exist, or all this sort of stuff? But as we've seen from the casting call for next season, you know, they're doing some of the Ironborn stuff that's in the fourth book and that sort of stuff. So it might be that they're going back to some book stuff that they skipped over this season. Then they're going to go back and do it next season. So for us to say, well, Aegon Targaryen didn't show up on Tyrion's journey, so that means Aegon Targaryen is not going to show up in the show, might be premature. Because I would expect that George R. R. Martin would be like, and most of all, they fucking left off the secret Targaryen prince that was really important, and I'm really pissed that that happened. So we'll see if he shows up next season. But you know, so either the Martell, or we could find out this week. You know, if when Prince Doran Martell reveals his plan to Jaime Lannister, he could be like, "There is a secret Targaryen, and I am backing him, and you will meet him next season when we cast him." Or, you know, this could all be part of that whole, like, mystery woman thing that Neil believes exists and I believe is, like, I don't know, a stand-in. I don't think there's an extra woman in that room, but we'll find out, I guess.
I keep trying to make, like, the perfect Deep Space Nine joke, and I just can't get there. The accent was too good to, like, break it up with a Cardassian mention. Anyway, yeah, I'm still sort of reeling from the thought that there's like a very real possibility we got one episode with Tyrion and Daenerys in the same place, just for how much I enjoyed it. But otherwise, that was Meereen. Lots of interesting history, and we continue on across the Narrow Sea. No, let's stay east. I like doing this geographically and not chronologically through the episode.
All right.
This episode doesn't have much of a theme outside of a huge climax, as far as I can tell. I'm going to stand behind that. I'm going to challenge people to prove me wrong.
All right, come up with a theme, listeners.
It's a slightly deeper challenge than usual, than just book learning facts.
Then, like, what detail did we get wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. So we're in Braavos, where Lana takes Kat's place from the book and serves a whole bunch of oysters to a gambler dude who has some sort of recognizable name from the books. Some sort of thin man, skinny man, waifish man. No, there's already a waif. That would make no sense.
They call him a thin man.
Thin man.
And there is, yeah, there is a book counterpart to that. But I mean, what happens in the book is that Arya ends up killing someone like for her own reasons.
Mace and Tyrell. Gets
Meryn Trant. No, but in the books, it's not Meryn Trant. So basically, you know, she kills this guy for her own reasons and gets punished for it. And so I believe that that's what's going to happen. She's going to kill Meryn Trant for her own reasons and get punished for it. So we'll see.
And so she's not going to kill it. Oh, pardon you.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Hello. So she's not going to kill Thin Man, or she's going to kill Thin Man next week when, or maybe even not next week. Maybe they'll save that for the finale.
No, I think she's going to kill him this week.
Oh.
Or she's going to be on her way to kill him and get distracted by Meryn Trant. I'm not sure, but
right.
What is interesting is
with Mace Tyrell
right.
going to the Iron Bank. Got it.
Right. And I think that's in this next episode. They do mention the Iron Bank in one of the episode descriptions, and I think it's this episode. Could be wrong. But yeah, because we know that we're going to see Mark Gatiss as the Bravosi banker this season. So we're going to see him. And what a lot of people have been wondering about is there's a person in the trailer, in the season 5 trailer, that she looks like she's probably a prostitute. And she definitely looks like she's a Bravosi prostitute given her style. Like, she's got 2 braids coming off her head and sort of like in the way that we've seen Arya have her hair up and stuff like that. So,
as is the style in Bravos.
Right, right. So she's kind of like writhing on the screen in front of some guy. Not writhing. She's turning around seductively. She doesn't have... She has clothes on, but not, you know, she's bearing some midriff is all. And so the question is, here's the question. Is this going to somehow be involved in Meryn Trant's death? Because they made a point of showing that Arya is friends with a prostitute. And actually, like an eagle-eyed listener pointed out that prostitute we met last season was Salador Slan. She's a redheaded prostitute that we saw in the baths last season. So, you know, is Arya's plot to kill Meryn Trant going to involve some sort of prostitute collusion? Even crazier, is Arya herself going to put on a face and, like, become this prostitute and, like, fake seduce him and kill him? It could happen. I don't know what the show is doing in terms of how your body changes when you swap faces. Because, you know, this young woman in the trailer is obviously much more mature in the body than Maisie Williams is. But, you know, could be she just, like, enlists some prostitutes to help her. Or we're going to see some face swapping. I mean, what Maisie Williams did say before the season is, I think she said something like, you won't recognize Arya. And either she was talking about, you know, these clothes that we saw her in this episode, which were, you know, debuted in the Entertainment Weekly, so they weren't like a huge shock. Or she's going to put on a different face. And I think that it would be kind of crazy if she didn't put on a different face before the end of the season. And the season ends, it's probably going to end with her going blind. And I can't tell right now whether or not that's going to be Jack and Hagar doing that to her, or if it's going to be the waif doing that to her. Temporarily blind. But I don't know. I can't quite tell what they're setting up the waif to do. You know, because the waif is like kind of really down on Arya. So, you know, if she feels like Arya deserves to be punished or something, she might do that. I don't know.
Anyway. Interesting. Well, and then we also have Needle planted earlier in the season as still being around. So I could see, as, you know, somebody who is watching the show moment to moment, like, not suspecting some sort of prostitute or dancer lady until all of a sudden she needles him. And then you're like, oh
my
man.
God, it's Arya! Yeah.
I dig that.
Yeah, but so this, I mean, this lady is, she might just be, and it might just be like, as is the show's wont, it might just be some background prostitute. That has no importance whatsoever.
Just
that,
around. Well, Mace Tyrell's, you know, like, oh my.
Yeah. Yes, I do want to see Mace Tyrell, like, bumble around prostitutes. That would be pretty great. So
work on his mustache a little bit. All right, let's see. Where should we go next? Let's go to Winterfell, where Sansa figures out for the second time in 2 weeks that she has more living relatives than she thought.
Yeah.
Which is nice. You know, anytime Rickon's mentioned on screen, I feel like an angel gets its wings.
Yeah. I really do think it's weird, though, because I don't know. I really don't ever remember her reacting to the news of Bran and Rickon. I could be wrong. Please tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember them ever showing her reacting to the fact that the boys were dead. So the fact that, you know, she was yelling at Theon like it really, really mattered to her. I mean, of course it matters to her. I don't know. I won't talk about this again because it makes me sound like a sociopath. I mean,
but... And there was, you know, she could tell it was a rough spot for Reek, obviously.
Yeah.
So, like, needling that out of him was probably, that's the spot you go for.
Needling it. Yeah.
I'm going to accidentally make that pun all through this episode.
Her needle is her emotional manipulation. But yeah, Sansa, I don't know. I still don't know what's going to happen with that girl.
I mean, at least now that the show had this confident of an episode, I'm less worried about it being lazy. I think we could both agree that it was unfortunate where it went, but like, I don't know. Just like the low point at somebody's arc could be anything. And I understand that we're on the other side of the low point now. And so I have a little bit more trust with where the show's going.
I guess. I mean, I don't feel, you know, I don't want to sit here and trash talk the show while we're discussing maybe my favorite episode of all time. But a lot of people I talk like, literally I ran into two people on the street and ended up talking about Game of Thrones for about a half an hour with them. So this is something that happens to me like all day, every day as I go about my business. People want to talk to me about Game of Thrones and, which is understandable because it's like what I do a lot of the time. But, both of them said I almost gave up after the last two episodes because they were just so awful for me. And both of them are book readers. And then they were like, and then this episode was so great. And I think that's sort of the, prevailing sentiment. And I think, you know, even if you were like, okay with the rape, whatever, I still don't think that was a great episode. Episode 6. And yeah, this was a great episode. So
yeah,
congratulations.
Well, like, and seeing what they were able to pull off in this episode, like technically and location wise, makes me, you know, I mean, what in my, you know, knowing television production background, I'm starting to get like a clearer picture of this, like, we need to make the most out of these moments where we could only spend like the least amount of money per episode this season, which once again, not an excuse, but adds on to the pile of ridiculous circumstances.
Like, it's okay that Dorne looked so stupid and shitty because they focus their energy and their money on this crazy, awesome, hard home thing.
Right. All the times that I've accused them of being lazy at times that I felt like they could have not been lazy, I'm starting to understand how their hand could have been forced in some of those situations.
I don't know. Episode 6 is narratively lazy, and that is less to do with time and budget than it does, you know, creativity. Right? I think.
Yes, but there's only like so many pieces to play with in the sandbox sometimes. And I'm not saying that like if you, you know, shut off a part of a really beautiful location and shoot a fight scene there and get to the edit bay and realize that like it's not.
No, I'm not even talking about Dorne. I understand Dorne. I'm talking about the Sansa stuff. I don't think that hard home means that I'm like, okay, well then it's fine that they did that. I still think it's not fine that they did that. And I also think that Hard Home was great.
All right, Sansa aside, I'm saying every time I've said lazy this season, I'm starting to understand those instances.
Yeah, and that's
better.
That's all I mean is like Sansa is like narratively lazy, but if it's like cutting corners almost, I mean, they have a gajillion-dollar budget, so it's weird to say cutting corners. But
well, there's a balance between like cutting corners and then also like making characters do different things and trying to abridge outside of a book. And there's a lot of different weird pressures that I'm starting to understand. That's like you can't. You know, at some point, if you're halfway down the road to Dorne, there's so many moving pieces that you're like, oh, crap, we're going to have three episodes in the middle of this season where Dorne's going to fall flat because we can't tell this, you know, secret or whatever's happening, because that's where we lose Jaime for this season. So it's like, I don't know. It's like how in old Star Trek seasons, they'd used to, you know, plan for the bottle episodes, or like the episode where Counselor Troy's mother came to visit.
I love like, Counselor Troy's mother. What? Come on now.
Oh, yes. Man. We have like opposite opinions on everything that we like. This is like Indiana Jones all over again.
Please tweet your support for Diana Troy's mother, because she was great.
I mean, it's fantastic because of who she actually is in real life, but it's a character. I don't know, man. Anyway, and then she came out of Deep Space Nine, too. I don't want to make this about Deep Space Nine. In that case, we'll pivot hard. Back at Winterfell, Neil's predictions about maybe Ramsay being the one that kills Shireen take a step closer to being a reality, as Ramsay wants to take 20 men north to do something to stop Stannis in his tracks, which could be anything, but might be a way to at least have him present at the climactic moment where Stannis almost burns his daughter.
Yeah, I tried to put together all the clues today in a post that I wrote for VanityFair.com about what I think the whole Ramsay, 20-man mission thing is going to be. As Neil pointed out in the trailer, for this episode, we see Melisandre turn around and sort of like look startled. So Neil is starting to pivot to like maybe it's Melisandre who gets taken, and that's why Selyse is so upset, you know. So the information we have is like Lady Selyse is upset, right, on the ground in the snow, which is from the trailer. We've got Ramsay is there with blood on his face. From the trailer for this week's episode, we've got the encampment is on fire. From the episode photos, we've got a photo of Shireen and Davos are going to have like a heartwarming scene. So I don't know. I think.
And then
I
we know Melisandre has one more scene with Jon Snow.
Yeah, I can't find that interview. That was something a listener said. And I can't find that interview where Carice Van Houten said she had one more scene with Kit Harington. But so here are my top three candidates for having bad shit happen to them in this episode.
Okay.
Melisandre, unlikely, I think.
Oh, further, this is who's going to... Oh, bad stuff happens to the people on this list. Melisandre, unlikely. All right, just wanted to get the rules out.
Melisandre's on the list, but she's unlikely. Shireen's on the list. She's pretty likely. Stannis is on the list, and that's also pretty possible. Because, you know, in the books, there's this whole pink letter thing that allegedly Ramsay sends to Jon. And it's like, you know, I've beaten Stannis. I want Theon back because Theon has escaped. Like, all this sort of stuff. And getting that letter is what prompts Jon to say, we need to rally the troops and go to Winterfell. And then that's what causes the men to mutiny. We know the men are going to mutiny in episode 10. So if, you know, Ramsay has Stannis by the end of this episode and sends that letter, I mean, it's ambiguous in the book who sends a letter. It's signed Ramsay, but it's ambiguous. And it's ambiguous whether that letter is telling the truth, whether Stannis did actually fall or whatever. But maybe instead of a letter, maybe Stannis gets captured from the camp. Let's play Neil, right? And say, let's say they burn Shireen and Stannis gets captured from the camp anyway. You know, like, he burned his daughter and he didn't even get, like, his victory. That would be the ultimate Game of Thrones shittiness, right? And then Selyse is upset because they took Stannis, right? That makes sense. That adds up. Melisandre then goes back to the wall for help and she asks Jon Snow for help.
And right? So she's not a letter. She's... her.
Instead of a letter, you have Melisandre. Instead of a pink letter, you have a red woman, and you have Melisandre at the wall where she needs to be if she's going to resurrect Jon, right? So you have Melisandre hightailing it back to the wall to be like, send, get all of your men. They have stolen, like, they have taken the king, you know?
And so is she going to, like, in this situation, she's already burned Shireen, but Stannis is gone. So does she use the power of burnt Shireen to resurrect Jon?
Maybe, or maybe she takes Shireen back to the... I don't know what's going to happen to Shireen. Shireen could even escape with Davos. I don't really know. I don't know if they're going to burn Shireen on screen. But I like... more and more, I like the idea of Stannis not being dead, but being captured. Or if he's dead, you know, either way, like, Melisandre would ask Jon Snow for help, I think.
Right.
You know, and say, like, they have your sister, maybe.
Well, she would go to him even if Stannis was dead, yeah, just because he's the next one with royal blood that she knows about.
Well, it's not the royal blood necessarily as the Azor Ahai, like, reborn, like, the Messiah reborn sort of stuff that Melisandre believes in that I think she's starting to think is Jon rather than Stannis. So,
yeah. Well, that's no good for Stannis.
And especially when Neil and I were talking about this, when Melisandre finds out what Jon did with his sword, because Azor Ahai, you know, has this famous, the flaming sword, famous sword, Lightbringer, I believe. So when Melisandre finds out that Jon Snow did some magical shit with a sword, aka like bust a White Walker into smithereens, she's gonna freak out. I think she's gonna think that he is Azor Ahai reborn, which is gonna motivate her to bring him back to life. So
interesting.
I'm trying to be Neil as best I can.
Yeah, no, I like this because it's like you lose Stannis, which I don't like, but you lose.
Well,
Stannis.
He's captured instead of killed.
Well, the thing is, like, if Melisandre's with Jon, there's no reason for the show to keep Stannis around.
We like Stannis.
I mean, we like Stannis, but, like, that has no bearing narratively.
There's also the question of Theon's sister, Yara, who we believe is going to ride in episode 10 as a sort of cavalry, like Stannis did last year.
Oh, so. Yeah. And maybe. Okay. All right. Still right. Hope for Stannis, but that was Winterfell. I smiled when Ramsay said a feast for crows. I don't have to read books to know the title of books.
You get these jokes.
Yeah, there's that one about the catcher in the rye fields. I know all these things. All right, at the wall, still in the north, Ollie's the worst, despite a pretty good speech from Sam, but just Ollie, just the worst.
I mean, he just made it really clear. That he's going to stab the shit out of Jon Snow.
Well, and planted the resurrection, which was nice, because Jon Snow always comes back.
Yeah, Jon Snow always comes back.
Which,
even from the dead.
Yeah, which, you know, is already an early contender for our last episode title. Because it's like, that's you go from you know nothing to Jon Snow always comes back, and those two phrases, I think, will cover the two eras of Jon Snow. Until, like, I don't know, Ice King... Ice
Forge. I'm so excited to talk about my theory about Jon Snow and the Night's King.
All right. We're not there yet.
I know.
Anything else at the wall?
I don't think so. No, I mean, I just...
Is there a Reddit you want to plug or anything?
No. I mean, the subreddit Fuck Ollie has grown from like 100 to over 1,000 since we talked about it on the podcast. So I think it's doing just fine. And it's beating... Dave Chen's Ollie Rules subreddit, which I think only has like 200 something.
Okay.
I mean, yeah.
As long as it's beating Ollie Rules.
Oh, by a lot. And what's great about Ollie Rules is that like all Fuck Ollie people are posting in there. They're like, you know, those subreddits are actually really hilarious. You don't have to subscribe to them to go look at them because, you know, people, I mean, I don't know. It's Reddit humor, but people post something in the head and then you click on it and it's something else and it's all great. So I would recommend those. I mean, some of the Fuck Ollie stuff gets a little more aggressive than,
yeah,
than
like,
I would personally advocate.
Like all anger-based criticism. It occasionally crosses the line.
Yeah. But, you know, that kid's going to stab Jon Snow. We did have a listener ask me on Twitter right before we started recording, you know, why would I want to stoke the sort of like Fuck Ollie flames when I know that he's going to stab Jon Snow and then all of his supporters are going to feel dumb? I mean, the thing is, Dave Chen is still going to support Ollie. That's just how Dave Chen is a stubborn human being. So he's still going to support Ollie even after he stabs Jon Snow. He's going to be like, well, I understand. You know, because Dave Chen is loyal, but everyone else, I think, will understand that Ollie is the worst.
Yeah, you're talking asshole. About the fiction purist people, the books were better group.
The angry GOT readers.
Yeah, angry GOT readers.
Yeah.
There was a whole angry readers booth at Denver Comic Con that had like Game of Thrones and Harry Potter t-shirts.
That's great.
It's like this whole Ollie controversy I like, because it's like the book readers have a slight edge, but the more episodes we get in and the more like just being able to watch a TV show and see foreshadowing is coming, it's like now the decision's even more stark. So for me, it's like, which side were you on before Ollie stabbed Jon Snow? That's what's important.
Yeah. Where'd you plant your flag the day that Ollie stabbed Jon Snow? We'll find out.
We'll all find out.
But I think, you know, we were wondering if maybe Ed would be involved. But I think after what Ed saw at Hardhome, he won't be part of the mutiny.
Yeah. And Sir Alistair's going to have to prove himself begrudgingly on his side at the gate, according to the next episode, right?
Yeah. At first I was like, does Jon even get back inside Castle Black? But then there are photos of him inside, like, talking to Sam. So he does. I wasn't sure if he and Sam were going to see each other again before Sam and Gilly left. But I guess they won't be leaving until, I don't know, like, maybe, because I think we all thought that Sam would leave before Jon got stabbed.
But he's gonna, but it might be a little bit more reactionary. He's got to be gone before the resurrection.
Yeah, so like maybe he thinks John's dead and he has zero friends, so he and Gilly get the fuck out of there.
They just jump on ghosts and away.
Maybe. Yeah.
Just all Ghost is doing is hanging out, watching out for Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Eating grapes, stopping rapes. I don't think they have grapes at the wall, but that's the most rhymey thing I could think about.
That's pretty great. They have grapes in Dorne, and they don't rape little girls in Dorne, allegedly, so.
Oh, that would be a great shirt with a Dornish. No, it wouldn't. I would not wear that shirt outside.
No.
So, in King's Landing, we get some book accurate things, as far as I could tell.
Mm-hmm.
Where Pycelle comes in and basically tells
Qyburn.
Qyburn comes in and basically tells Cersei what's been going on. And Kevin Lannister's back, which means he's set up to be the Hand, if I'm remembering things that we've talked about on this podcast.
Yeah.
And
he might even be the regent. I mean, he's definitely the Hand. He might even be the regent at this point. Ooh. King regent.
But we'll probably figure that out because Qyburn says his experiments are continuing as planned, which means Zombie Mountain.
Zombie Mountain, but I don't know if it's going to be Zombie Mountain until next season.
Wouldn't that just be a great way to, like, end it? End like the Cersei storyline? Like, she gets through the walk, and then there's the...
Well, the walk is not until the finale, though, so I feel like they just need to end with the walk, right?
Well, but, like, they end with the walk, and she gets, like, I don't know. She's having, like, her lowest moment, and then Zombie Mountain and Qyburn come in. They're planting it too much this season, aren't they? To push it off to next season?
I don't know, honestly. It just doesn't seem like... I feel like, narratively, it's stronger to end on the walk. That she does the walk of shame, and that is the Cersei moment in the finale. There's going to be so much to do in the finale anyway, right? That I think ending on her walk... It would be the stronger choice. I mean, he could sit up. I mean, I guess he could, like, sit up in the lab. But she's not going to have, like, an interaction with him, I think. Because they have to cut her hair. I mean, it's going to be a whole thing. And then the walk is going to just be long and awful. And then there's going to be, like, awful humans who are cheering for it. I mean, I get it. Cersei's the worst. But if you are, like, actively cheering a naked, humbled woman being jeered in the street, I don't...
I'm just saying, if you're going to have, if you're going to introduce resurrection in the world, just hit it in the same episode.
Maybe.
Just like we might hit frost colored eyes depending on who resurrects Jon Snow. We're getting there. Not there. Not there yet. Wait, yes, we are. We're going to finally go to Hardhome unless there's anything in King's Landing that I'm forgetting about.
I don't think so. I'm Tommen really isn't eating. Yeah, Tommen isn't eating. Marjorie's still in her cell. I'm really curious what they're going to do with Littlefinger, right? Because for once, he didn't, like, get from one location to the next in the span of an episode. So is he going to get back to Winterfell this week? I don't know. I love that whole, like, goddamn misleading HBO description was like Sansa, you know, confronts an old friend, right? Or something like that. And then we like tore out our hair trying to think who that was. And then it was just Theon who was like, they had already talked about her talking to Theon in a different description, and he was never her friend. So it was just very misleading.
I guess it's because like they finished the first draft of the episode descriptions. Are like, this three just says Sansa talks to Theon. Get out the thesaurus.
Sansa talks to someone she's met. Sansa talks to an old friend.
Of the Starks.
Next week is Danny presides over a display of athleticism. Is next week or this week. And I was saying that it was my favorite one, but then someone pointed out that last season, whenever it was that Sam Gilly confronted that White Walker. Yeah, it was last season. The description was Sam and Gilly meet a very old man. They were talking about the White Walker. So great. I kind of want to go back through and read all of the HBO descriptions and match them up to, like, you know, what were the weirdest, most oblique, most esoteric, like, description of big, like, crazy events.
That sounds like a post.
Yeah, sure does. Don't beat me to it, internet.
All right. So we're finally in the corner piece of this episode, and the thing that sort of resurrects Game of Thrones action cred. I used resurrect. And needles are anticipation.
Ah, there you go.
Of the oncoming fight between fire and ice.
There you go.
Song of ice and fire reaches its refrain.
The needles of winter and
that's where it would have helped to have Neil, because we would have just been able to keep escalating, which is like the crazy energy. Anyway, in Hardhome, where Jon isn't supposed to be in the books, he shows up to negotiate the wildling thing. We meet Carsey, who's awesome, and another Thenn guy who all Thens look like bald Eric Bana to me. Maybe it's Star Trek ruined.
About to say Eric Bana from Star Trek, maybe.
Yeah, but they all look like that. So we got Thenn leader and Carsey. They sort of the Thens don't buy it. The wildlings do, because Tormund steps in for Jon, and then all hell breaks loose with the White showing up. And they start punching through the walls, and they think they're going to be able to hold them back until there's four White Walkers up on the mountain. So Jon's like, oh shit, get the dragon glass. We left it in the meeting room. And they go there, and it's on fire because one, the giant has stepped out of it fighting whites off. And they don't get the glass, but they fight a White Walker who kills the Thenn. And then Jon gets away and hits him with the dragon steel, Valyrian steel sword. And then they get in a boat, and 1-1 strides into the sea as the Night King raises everybody. And somewhere in there, Carsey gets devoured by children. And we'll bring up other things as they become important. But we need to start with the most important thing. Can giants swim?
As Dave said to me earlier, to the sea is not a plan.
No, it's not. He seems like an important part of the resistance.
1-1, to the sea.
Okay, I'll just keep going straight.
I mean, it looked great, right? And then, you know, and then if they just get to the other side and one runs with them,
the episode is just like this wide shot, and it's like, what? It's not like a swimming giant at the end, which I agree would have been not dramatic, but it's like, he could swim, right? He shows up somewhere, wherever the boats are going.
Yeah, he'll go, I believe he'll go with them to the wall. He's there at the wall in the books.
Okay, good.
He actually, like, starts beating, like, not, you know, like the Hulk does to Loki. No. Yeah. He basically starts doing that to some guy, and that's when Jon, like, gets distracted, and that's when he gets stabbed by the Watch. So we'll see if they have like the whole Loki moment.
So it's like 1-1. 1-1 and Ollie, the biggest character and the smallest character.
Oh my god, if 1-1 were to Hulk Loki Ollie, that would be so great. Puny Ollie. Yeah,
that would be the build up that would make me switch subreddits. if that was his purpose. And John's like, Ollie, no, one, no. And then Alistair just like stabs him in the back.
Yes, yes. Yeah, okay, here's what I'll say.
For the watch!
If they end up, if it ends up not being Ollie stabbing Jon Snow, I will consider withdrawing my support from the Fuck Ollie Reddit.
There's you know, ways it could play out where, like, someone else stabs them and Ollie, who is supposed to be in on it, like, you know, changes his mind and jumps
goes,
on his
no!
back and, like...
And furrows his brow and goes, no, yeah. John! Yeah, could happen.
Or he goes, ah, and then runs to Sam and he's like, you gotta get out of here now, man. Jon Snow's not coming back.
Or he stabs... Okay, no, this is too... That's too nasty. I'll say it anyway. He stabs Jon Snow and then Ghost, like, just takes Ollie out. It's rough. Some rough stuff. Okay. Anyway, hard home. You know, let's say 1-1 runs out to the sea and then just sort of wades around, like, skirts the shore enough that the whites, who apparently can't swim, can't reach him, mm-hmm. and then walks back onto shore on the other side.
All right.
And then it's like, oh, me, you at the wall, or whoever right. one talks.
But like the T-Rex, which we used to think couldn't swim, but actually it was a fine swimmer, 1-1's going to be one's gonna be cool.
How do they show the – that's in Jurassic Park 2, right? Do they show the T-Rex swimming? Do, like, is he using his tail? Is that what's happening? Because he can't use those little arms, right?
Oh, it's
or
not
does he just
in,
show up Los, in
it's
Los
not
Angeles?
It's not in a Jurassic Park movie. The third one, the Spinosaurus, is in the river attack. But, like, I think in between the writing of the first Jurassic Park novel and now, we've discovered that the T-Rex actually
exists. Oh, science knows that. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Science
knows. It's not that Steven
T-Rex.
Spielberg knows that T-Rexes can swim. It's that science knows.
Science has discovered that T-Rexes can swim.
Okay, sorry.
And hopefully giants.
And hopefully one-ones. Yes.
That's all that happened at Hardhome this week, guys.
The end. Some people are asking about the dragon glass. Mm-hmm. It was really weird to me because, okay, so John had the dragon glass bag, and then 1-1 had, you know, at least one dragon glass dagger, right, that he was looking at. Mm-hmm. And then in a later shot, Ed was like, and some other people were like picking up dragon glass daggers. So he's like, here's another one. They're everywhere. I didn't really understand that. And then when John went in to look for them, it was like under some debris and he found one. And then it got knocked out of his hand and he didn't need it anyway because he's got his badass sword. But, state of the dragon glass. I mean, we know that John went into that building for the dragon glass. We know that Ed doesn't have the dragon glass because this was maybe my favorite line of the episode when Ed goes, fuck the dragon glass, we're all gonna die here. and then I think directly after that, Ed goes, oh, fuck.
And that's Ed how, was like, that was the point where you were like, he's back on John's side now.
Yeah, Ed was such a hero to me in this episode. I loved it. I wish he had been more of like a present friend for John throughout the season. Instead of like so many Ollie and that's what I'm saying. For every Ollie and John scene, we could have gotten an Ollie and Ed scene. It would have been much more entertaining to me. So back to Hard Home. Dragon glass, question mark. What's going on there?
I think it's gone. I think the bag's gone.
Yeah. 1-1 might have. I mean, well, that's pretty shitty that Sam had this like sitting on this bag of dragon glass and then, you know, it got burnt. But I think it's possible that 1-1 has like at least one.
One.
What?
I mean, it's more narratively weird for this thing that was planted in season one, right? At the Fist of the First Men?
Two?
Mm-hmm. Season two ended up being just like an object that led to the discovery of Valyrian steel being able to kill White Walkers.
Right.
But that is very Game of Thronesy to be like, look at the thing that's gonna save us all. Oh shit, now it's behind thousands of corpses.
Well, I think that it might be that the Fen also implied that there is a supply of dragon glass around. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens with the obsidian. I'm not sure.
Anyway, super cool zombie attack also that happened. I spent a lot of time marveling at decisions of where to put the fully skeletal CGI characters.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have to do it a lot, and they chose really well it, where it was already sort of interacting with other CGI elements or was away from, like, sort of dust or other fighters. So I had a nice little visual effects moment.
Yeah, I agree. It was just worlds better than what we saw last year with Jojen.
And then better geography, even though it kind of didn't need it, than the whole battle at the wall, which ended up sort of getting chaotic at the end.
I think so, too. Something that I talked about a little bit on Twitter, but there is a you know, behind the Battle of Hardhome video that's on HBO on YouTube. And in it, Weiss and Benioff give Miguel Sapochnik, I believe is the name of the director, they give him credit for reining in the scope. Like, I think initially Hardhome was going to be an entire episode. And it was just going to be vast and big and a repeat of Watchers on the Wall, basically.
Hmm.
And it was Miguel Sapochnik's idea to rein it in, to put everything behind that fence, which even before I knew that, I said in the Cast of Kings podcast is my favorite part of the episode, that you had that embattlement there, and it just contained the action into, you know. So I heard some people thought it was still too chaotic, but I didn't think so. I thought it was just really clear action, and it's kind of amazing. It's not always easy to define bad action. You can just be like, oh, God, I just didn't like that. And then when someone does it so well, I felt the same way about Mad Max. I'm just like, this is good action that I can follow. And even when it gets like a little too chaotic for my eyes, I'm still tracking everything that's going on versus, you know, Avengers or something like that.
Yeah. This one had like three really distinct locations. They had the mid-wall that separates Hardhome. Which I didn't realize separated like half of it until the pullout shot at the end, and you realize that all those people had become whites as well.
Yeah.
The hut that 1-1 bursts out of / where John does the walker, and the shore.
Yeah.
And they're all things that stand out immediately against like white, and everybody else is like whites and grays and skeletons and like blues. So even if you're like quickly panning through something, you've got like the Jon Snow, who's in all black, so he's like this negative space shadow that can move through and you could track him. And you could immediately establish locations just like out of the corner. It's like, there's the shore, there's the wall, there's the building, there's the shore. And then they only ever panned up to the cliffs. They never just immediately cut to the cliffs. So everything was just really geographically well placed. I enjoyed the crap out of it.
Yeah, it was so good. I encourage you, Dave, because you are like an FX sort of geek more than I am, to watch this behind the scenes video, because they show the guys. It's cool. They show the skeletal guys like in their green lycra suits, right? So they're like wearing rags over, you know, their mocap green lycra, as so then they like are fighting, and then you get to see it again with them as skeletons. It looks so cool. You know, and then they show the stunt, and then they show the shot again where like the when Jon Snow hits it with the sword, it like, you know, the skeleton bursts into nothing. But they had people there for everything, which is why everything looked so solid.
And they made really good decisions between just like low level makeup effects, like a special makeup effect, and like a full CGI replacement.
Yeah.
To the point where it's like you only see, I don't know, like six, or I'm gonna say maybe eight full skeletons that are like doing things, and two of them are on 1-1 because CGI thing, interacting with CGI thing, you get like the best physics out of that.
Yeah.
But just like the decision to do that, or then only have certain things sticking through like the wall, so you don't
Having little holes, so you've got like the top half of a skeletal body, and it could be a puppet if you need it to, or something. Yeah.
They made the most out of the fact that these aren't zombies, they're things that could live through any stage of death. And probably, you know, reused some assets from the Skeleton Warriors that popped out at us at the end of last season.
And I think the kids are the best example of that, because you have, like...
Oh, yeah, that really crazy one front and center.
Yeah, the ribcage kid, like, front and center, and then you've got the other kids in various states of decomposition. Yeah.
Basically, very nice-looking little girl in tall hat.
Yes. What else did I want to say about that? There was something. I forget. Oh, the hooded guy. That was another big controversy from the scene is that when, or not controversy, I don't know, fan speculation thing. Yeah, on the boat. When John and Ed and Tormund are on the boat and they're looking back at the shore, there's a guy right at the front. I mean, you see that the guys rowing the boat are also wearing hoods that completely cover their faces with one pan across. They look even creepier. They look like Nazgul. They're wearing these like black hoods. It's pretty. But in the behind the scenes video, the actor who plays Ed, who's I think his name is Ben Crompton, mm-hmm. He says he can't swim. And so they showed that they had these guys in wetsuits, like in the water at all time, ready to go. And I'm pretty sure that the guy in the front of the boat was a guy in a wetsuit in a hood, wearing a hood. So you couldn't tell that he was in a wetsuit. I tried to get HBO and/or the director to comment on this, and they refused to. But like a lot of people are like, since you saw his face really briefly, it's a bearded guy. You see his face really briefly, but a lot of people are like, oh, it's Benjen, it's Lady Stoneheart. It's
when do you see his face? Know?
When they get on the boat, it pans like when they first get on the boat, it pans across the whole boat, and you see the side. It's on the from the side. Mm-hmm. And you see a shot of his face. And the internet has screen capped this and stuff like that. It's just a guy with a beard. It doesn't look like Benjen. It doesn't look like anyone we know. But what is unsettling about the shot is that when you have the later shot where it's like full on the boat and he's wearing the hood, Dave Chen pointed this out. What is so unsettling about that is that he doesn't turn around when everyone is staring in shock and horror at the shore. The hooded guy does not turn around. And so your brain is like, what is going on? Why is that hood guy not turning around? And my answer, I think, is that he's wearing a wetsuit so he can, like, fish Ben Crompton out of the water at any given moment is my guess. So
it sounds like an educated guess.
But it does look, like, odd. It doesn't look right. It looks like they're trying to hide something. And maybe they are. Maybe it will end up being Benjen or Lady Stoneheart in a beard. But I think it's a guy in a wetsuit, so.
Benjen. Yeah.
Bad news, Benjen.
Bad news, Benjen.
That was my favorite Neil tweet from Sunday night. He's like, no Benjen in the previously on. My life is over.
Yeah, that with the episode Benjen comes back, we're going to know within the first 30 seconds the episode's on. He's going to be like, previously on Game of Thrones. That guy left that you care about now. When he left, nobody cared about him. I didn't know to care about all the Starks.
Uncle Benjen. Or you thought he was coming back when he was like, Jon Snow, we'll talk when I get back. And then he left. And
those first few episodes was like everybody being like, we'll talk when I get back. I'm going to this place you've never heard of.
And then they never saw each other again.
Yeah, and Sansa's like, oh, I'm going to love the capital. Ugh. In more innocent times.
We got, I just want to say, interject really quickly. I did ask for crackpot theories on Twitter, and we just got two. Well, we got like basically 100 from Pat Spinagle, who's one of our, you know, more dedicated listeners. But going back to the Marine stuff, it's worth addressing now because this will be answered on Sunday, but he has a theory that Tyrion is going to take on the Strong Belwas role, which is Strong Belwas, who's one of the characters, right, that George R. R. Martin said he's bummed is not in the show. He gets a little poisoned by these locusts that Hisdar is trying to get Dany to eat. So basically, like, you kind of think that maybe Hisdar tried to poison Dany and Strong Belwas, who's like, you know, this big monosyllabic guy, he's like, whoa, locust, whoa, puts them all in his mouth and eats them instead. So maybe Tyrion, you know, and it happens up in sort of that, like, well, I think it happens on the way to the pits. But anyway, if they're sitting up there, as we've seen in the set photos, they're going to be sitting up there watching over the pits. If Tyrion eats the locust, he might get a little poisoned. It could happen.
A little poisoned.
Yeah, just a touch. And then, yeah, then there's the other question, which I suspect we'll find out for sure on Sunday, is who is behind the Sons of the Harpy? Is it Hisdar or is it Daario? You know, because sort of more, you know, Daario is like pushing that it's Hisdar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he's like, oh, they've stopped attacking since, you know, and Hisdar got engaged. So he's obviously, you know, the leader of the Sons of the Harpy. But then the evidence for Daario is that Daario knew just where to find that one harpy that one time. And it would be more of a shocking surprise if Daario ends up being the leader of the Sons of the Harpy and stuff like that. So But I know from footage and stuff that we see the Sons of the Harpy circling, and it's Daario and Dany and Jorah and Tyrion and Missandei and Grey Worm in the pit. It feels weird to me that Daario would be like sort of in there, like helping defend Dany if he were the leader of the Sons of the Harpy. But we'll find out. Like, maybe.
Also, who likes his Dar? No one.
No one likes his Dar. Well, that's the thing. It's like, it's not going to be a shock surprise if his Dar is the leader of the Sons of the Harpy. But if Daario, who's been boning Dany all season, I mean, that might be a reason for her to get on the dragon. She's like, oh, I was having sex with you all season.
Oh, you mean that I don't know anything about being a ruler? Screw this
away! all right. We can go back to Hardhome. Sorry.
Yeah, I feel like we should talk about the Night's King.
Yes, yes.
I think we talked about, I don't know, I'm sure we've talked about him like last season, but he is like the 13th Lord Commander of the Night's Watch who had sex with the White Walker. He took as his wife, and they were on the wall for 13 years and were sacrificing things, and then was defeated by the King of the North, who was a Stark, and Old Man says that his name is Bran Stark. When she's talking to Bran after he falls out of the thing.
I mean, you know, as old Nans are wont to do, is like, and maybe he was a Stark, and maybe his name was Bran, you know? And I sort of decided that that was true, but I guess in A World of Ice and Fire, it's Brandon Stark is the Stark who takes the Night's King down. He allies with the guy who was basically the Manspreader at the time, Jorimund, which sounds like Tormund, but anyway, Jorimund, who's the king beyond the wall. That's what they say.
The Manspreader of his day.
Yeah, king beyond the wall is the thing. So he's the king beyond the wall. He, united with Bran Stark, and they took down the Night's King, who had basically ensorcelled. I think that's the word, right? Ensorcelled.
Ensorcelled?
I think it's a weird, funky word, like ensorcelled, but I could be wrong. Anyway.
I like ensorcelled.
let's pretend it's a word. Yeah. So, but so what happened is, like, the Night's King was so evil that his name was sort of struck from the history books. So they don't talk about his name ever. We don't know his name. But, ensorcelled is a word, yes.
Oh, nice.
but when and a listener pointed me to this, this is like a theory on a Reddit or a wiki somewhere or something like that, is that when Ygritte meets Jon Snow and he says his name is Jon Snow, she's like, oh, Jon Snow, that's an evil name. And so there are some theories that the Night's King's real name was Jon Snow, or Jon, at least.
And he would have become a Snow by being the Night's King, or by being sent to the wall? No, because you don't lose
If he were a bastard, he could be named Jon Snow, or he could be named Jon Stark, or, you know, one of those. But if his name is Jon, and then there's like a Bran Stark involved, and a Joramon versus a Tormund, or whatever, and but yeah, anyway, Jon Snow, I think it would be really cool if the Night's King's name was Jon, and like Jon is destined to be the new Night's King, but he is so virtuous that he decides not to be. He's going to be a good zombie. He's going to be like Warm Bodies, that Romeo and Juliet zombie movie.
Well, because he fell in love with a living person.
Yeah, through love, he decides he like unzombies himself.
So like,
don't you think that his icy heart will be melted by the fire of his sister or no, what, yeah, cousin, aunt Daenerys Targaryen? Yeah, mm-hmm. The Targaryens marry Targaryens all the time, so it's fine.
Yeah, and like slightly mutant baby would be the least important thing to happen to that family. There's like one resurrected ice god and one Targaryen dragon rider girl. Yeah. If their baby has three arms, they'll be like, meet your Uncle Tyrion. He was also weird. Look how he turned out.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Night's King is coming down. Oh, someone wanted to ask, or someone asked in a comment at fightinginthewarroom.com, why now for the Night's King returning if he's been sort of absent? Why is he coming with the winter this time? Is it because it's the timing of Jon Snow? It's just one of those times?
There are some questions about this, about like magic going in and out of the world of Westeros and all of that. Like, why did the dragons disappear? You know, wasn't because Valyria fell because there were dragons in Westeros. So why did dragons disappear? Why did the White Walker sort of go into hibernation a bit? You know, why did the magic sort of seep out of the world for a while? And one of the theories, I think, is that the Maesters, you know, the Maesters who are sort of the scientists kind of the world suppressed the magic. I'm not quite sure what George R. R. Martin's trying to say about that, but that's sort of like one of the accusations, is the Maesters like sort of made the dragons go away, made the dragons die out, made all of that. And please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I was just recently reading up on the histories of the dragons and stuff like that. I fell down some wiki holes, and that was one of the things that I saw. So
I like that theory, because it makes Qyburn's character more complex, where he's like constantly being rejected for poking at like what he doesn't know is actually the reason for his profession.
Yeah.
Being like, don't unlock that. Our whole reason for existing is to keep that locked up. And oh no. Is it something to do with that comet, or was that comet just a cool thing that said dragons were being born from season one?
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, is the comet like also magic re-entering? Was that more about just dragons being born or weird celestial
bodies?
No,
magic coming back into the earth, basically. So what we've seen is just, yeah, an increase in magic in Westeros with the dragons and then the encroaching White Walkers and that sort of stuff. So, I don't have a strong answer for you, and whether that's because my memory is fuzzy on details, and please, please, listeners, I love it when you tell me weird and complex histories that I didn't absorb. And also, you know, World of Ice and Fire is a very interesting resource that I have not explored. Even though I own it, I haven't explored it. So, you know, there are a lot of details of backstory that maybe I don't have a firm grasp on. So please do write in if I'm not representing things correctly, and I will correct myself next time around. But that's my perception, is that sort of magic fell out of the world for a while, and we had warlords like, you know, Robert Baratheon took the throne basically with a war hammer, you know. And then slowly we're seeing it seep back into the world with the White Walkers, with, you know, the red priests and the red priestess and with the dragons. So.
Nice. I'm interested now what made magic leave the world, but I suppose we have other seasons where we're going to get vague hints at that, because they're coming and they're unstoppable, and there are thousands that have now been added to their numbers. It's horrible. It's a horrible situation up there. You don't live farther north than me, do you? That might be important. Move south.
I might. I don't know. You live higher. Are we talking about north, closer to the stars? No. Yeah. Closer to the North Pole.
No, that's only closer to dragons is what I hear. Further up in the air. That's no good.
But yeah, I mean, I think what's pretty clear, you know, and I wrote about this on Vanity Fair, given that we saw the White Walker actively suppress fire, given that we got confirmation in this episode that hadn't been confirmed in the books that Valyrian steel will like break a zombie into pieces or a White Walker into pieces. So we know the dragon glass, dragon steel, dragon fire probably are the three weapons that we need to take down the army of the dead, or whatever it is that Bran is learning in his, you know, tree school that he's in right now.
He's going to come Neo the whole thing. I'm going to be so pissed.
Well, I mean, I think most people assume that Dany, Tyrion, and Jon will be riding the three dragons, that Bran will warg into one, if not all three dragons, and sort of help control them, maybe.
I don't know what role Arya has to play. That's a good question. You know, like, you can kind of see where Jon and Bran and Tyrion and Dany all fit in, like, sort of a big supernatural battle. But, like, is Arya just going to, like, dart around stabbing people? Like, what is her...
just list and nothing but the list for the rest of Arya's life. And Sansa's going to become like... Lady Stoneheart, and that's just what that the rest of the show is about for them.
Yeah, like, what are the Stark sisters going to do? Are they going to, like, is Arya going to... put on the like a face of a White Walker? You can't do that, but let's just pretend you can. I want to see like Arya like put on the Night's King face and then do a whole like, oh, I'm the Night's King.
Well, she at least is closer to the magic re-encompassing the world, I would say, at least from like a narrative standpoint, than Sansa is, unless Sansa becomes the Lady Stoneheart stand-in.
Yeah. Let's hope she doesn't have to die to do that. So, we'll see.
Well, as we alluded to with the characters George R. R. Martin wanted to, like, leave out, he makes a very clear point that, like, in his mind, Lady Stoneheart isn't Catelyn anymore. So, I don't know if they drastically change a character that we've cared for this much. I think it's, you know, keeping her damaged and... pulling back up out of that is narratively more powerful.
Well, what's interesting to me is a lot of people seem to think that if Shireen does survive this, she's going to somehow end up with Brienne, and I'm not sure. I think that would be an interesting, fun pairing. We know that Brienne likes being a grump, and Shireen likes being adorable and like melting the hearts of grumpy people, so that might be kind of fun. But they really have underused Gwendolyn Christie and Daniel, what's his name? Daniel Portman, who plays Podrick. This season, right? Brienne just sort of stands outside Winterfell and stares for a couple episodes.
Yeah, and she's not really poised to do anything that awesome that we're guessing. I suppose Winterfell is slightly... I mean, if Sansa's going to get out from under Ramsay's thumb, it's while he's up being a psychopath with Stannis. So maybe that's what we're doing next episode, too?
If Littlefinger doesn't show up at Winterfell this week... you know, which will be really suspect because we know he's got that giant mockingbird. Mm-hmm. The other option is that he's still lurking in King's Landing and is going to take on the Varys role of killing Kevin and Pycelle. Or it could be Varys shows up to kill Kevin and Pycelle. Varys, I'm sorry you don't read the books because you love Varys. And I can just, like, imagine you getting to the end of Dance of Dragons and just, like, pumping your fist in the air, being so excited because Varys shows up and, like, basically delivers a Bond villain monologue while, like, after he shot Kevin Lannister. Kevin Lannister's dying, and he's like, this was my plan all along. It's so funny.
Well, I mean, it has to be Varys if they're going to do that in the show, because that would – Littlefinger's sort of betting on stuff happening up north.
We don't know what Littlefinger's doing. I really don't feel like we know what Littlefinger's doing. But in the show context, Varys is the one who's thrown himself in with the Targaryen. So Varys undermining the Baratheon reign, which is what, you know, the whole shooting Kevin and Pycelle is about, is, you know, makes more sense. But
it is chaos-y, and we don't know.
Or he might do at the end of next season, actually, because I think it's supposed to coincide with that whole Aegon thing, and if they do the Aegon thing, then they have to wait until next season to do it.
Yeah, that would be my question.
And at some point, Balon Greyjoy is going to die, in theory. So, you know.
Okay, I feel better about that being saved, then, because it makes narratively little sense for Varys to show up and kill Kevin and is that who else does he kill?
Pycelle.
And Pycelle. Yeah. Just because narratively that hasn't been planted to me. No, it hasn't been planted this season. I don't think it's going to happen.
And it shouldn't be planted. I mean, Varys shows up out of the goddamn blue.
Well, but what I'm saying is that we don't know.
After being gone for like two whole books.
But we still don't know like what his. I mean, yes, that sounds awesome. But in the show, we don't know what his goals are outside of getting Dany and Tyrion together. I don't know why Varys would benefit from killing those two, or how he would know that those two were in a position where it'd be beneficial to kill them.
Varys knows everything.
I guess that works on the show. It just feels
Varys knows everything,
weird.
And like I said, he would show up and he would Bond monologue about it. He'd be like, by the way, Kevin Lannister. I mean, it seems weird to me that they would have Kevin Lannister show up just to bump him off in episode 10.
Right.
I feel like he's going to hang out a little longer than that, but we'll see.
Fair enough. Well, is there anything else that we need to add to Hardhome? Is there any characters that we're never going to see again? Probably not. All the people from the Sansa plot in the book, though, that are doing this pie baking thing that never materialized, they're getting closer to the Boneyard, right?
Well, the Manderly. I mean, like.
I always forget the family names.
Yeah, the Manderly stuff is not going to happen ever, but what's sad is that, like, it seems like Sansa's not even going to bake anyone to a pie, which is a real hot bummer because that would have been awesome. So. But we'll see. We'll see.
All right. Until we see, Joanna, where can people find more of your writing on the internet?
You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JoeWroteThis.
You can find me on Twitter at DA7E, online at Geek.com, Latino-Review.com, and Forbes.com, and podcasting at FightingInTheWarRoom.com, where you could find back episodes of this podcast at FightingInTheWarRoom.com/GotSpoilers. So until next time, when we'll dance with dragons. We'll see you later. This has been a Storm of Spoilers.